engineer this morning was Kate Wells. I want to thank her, and I want to thank all of our intelligent callers and all of our intelligent listeners. Thank you for being part of the KBOO community. It's placed over the detainee's face. Cold water is poured on the cloth. The wet cloth creates a barrier through which it's difficult, or in some cases not possible, for the detainee to breathe.
And it is just a few seconds before 10 a.m. Stay tuned for Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a talk by noted author and radical historian Vijay Prasad on the Middle East. And at 11, the KBOO Food Show looks at a touring exhibit called Inheritance Stories, which features food stories from the Latino community in Oregon. We'll hear stories from the closing the Hunger Gap Conference of the Oregon Food Bank, and we hear a conversation with Andrew Moore, author of Papa, In Search of America's Forgotten Fruit. Thanks for listening to KBOO. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
Start your Saturday morning with a little swingin' country. The KBOO Swingin' Country program will be broadcasting live from the Tin Shed Garden Cafe on Saturday, October 24th, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I know you've been hankering to put a face to those velvety tones, so here's your chance. You are welcome to come early, pull up a chair, and enjoy some coffee, food, and an earful of swinging country. The Tin Shed Garden Cafe is located at 1438 Northeast Alberta Street in the City of Roses. Again, that's Swinging Country live from the Tin Shed, Saturday, October 24th, here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, October 21st, 2015, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm, on the web. Today, we're going to try to reach Helen Goodteacher. She's a Nez Perce tribal leader, activist, and, of course, a teacher. She is a spokesperson when it comes to most things to do with the Nez Perce people in the Umatilla Reservation. And she perhaps will be able to join us on the issue of breaching the four dams on the Snake River to help endangered salmon runs. The excuse of our energy needs, whether real or imaginary, has been used as leverage to take over land that belongs, of course, to First Nations, to Indigenous people. This happens all across the country and many places. It happens without a whisper said in defense of Indigenous peoples, and laws, treaties that have existed for really decades, hundreds of years, have been not overturned, but just simply ignored. In the case of these dams, the Nez Perce have already suffered enough of pillage on the part of the white colonial, but what I like to call, we refer to as an occupying army. The issue, though, comes up again and again following a renewed political pressure to remove the dams. People who oppose the structures have have launched a number of actions over the years, most recently on October 3rd on the Snake River. Up to 200 boats showed up. They unfurled a gigantic banner that said, "Free the Snake." The obvious reason being the dams, which create these vast reservoirs and make it possible for Lewiston, Idaho, which is miles, 450 miles from the Pacific, to operate as the farthest inland seaport on the West Coast. But that's not the real reason. One major reason is that it's very easy to run through the streets of Lewiston and scream, "Jobs, jobs," and everybody, of course, wants a job. Too many people is the reason, but it's simply just not enough work to go around. Most work these days is either outsourced or done by robots. It's automated people, and there just simply isn't enough work to absorb the numbers of people who need to make a living. Those are the hard, cold facts of the matter. The sad part here is that the environment and indigenous people, of course, which is one and the same, are paying the price. And these dams, of course, have been there for a long time. When they went in, there was the Native peoples had virtually no voice, just as the Treaty of 1855, and then just a very few short years later, in 1863, the lands of the Nez Perce people had been so incredibly diminished as to add insult to injury yet again. So we're going to try to talk with Helen, good teacher today. I don't know if they'll be able to do that. We're going to talk some more about land and people and the relationship and the oneness of land, people, and all the creatures on the land. Yesterday, there was a press conference. 31,000 and comments were delivered to the offices of Senator Ron Wyden. The object here was to protect Crater Lake as wilderness. Many people actually think Crater Lake is already protected as wilderness and would be shocked to learn that they're thinking of having a tunnels underneath the surrounding ridge that would end in yacht harbors on Crater Lake. And of course, they would need to have helicopters taking people on tours around the rim and various other massive disastrous resorts. And that's just for starters. That doesn't take into account the logging interests and indeed very likely mining interests. So the rush to cash in on Crater Lake has been on for a number of years. This effort to protect Crater Lake comes somewhat late in the game. Many of these corporate interests have already have a little bit of skin in the game, as they say, and would like a lot more. So that said, Crater Lake, protected as wilderness, is it's one of those issues that all you can say about it is that, well, it's about time. Months of public input, Environment Oregon, Oregon Wild, the Umpqua Watersheds people gathered together after highlighting the overwhelming and broad public support for increased protection of Crater Lake. Volunteers did, in fact, show up, brought the signature to Ron Wyden's office. And Mary Gautreau, the deputy state director for Wyden, accepted the petitions. And that said, after the delivery, the groups are holding another celebration event. So we really want to what the message here is. Many areas of Oregon that people have camped in and hiked in, fished and so forth, hunted for years, assuming that it was wilderness area and as such it was, it had received already, if not federal protection, state protection. This is not always the case. And there are, California has preserved 15% of its wildlands are protected. I believe that Washington is somewhere like 8 or 9%. Oregon, it considers itself so green and so environmentally conscious. Have another beer, jump on your bicycle, go off to the park, all of these things. But we're at a paltry, dismal 4% of our wildlands are protected. We have virtually nothing left of our wilderness areas. Old growth forests are in serious danger. The idea that the Elliott State Forest is ever even on the table as far as logging is concerned is a disgrace. It's something that everyone ought to be painfully aware of and be working day and night to change that. If anything, what we get Crater Lake protected, and that is essential. But then look around us and look at the other areas. Look at the land that the Pacific Connector Pipeline is going to cross in southern Oregon into California from Jordan Cove. Look at that. Look at the land that goes through. Doesn't that deserve protection? Doesn't the Elliott State Forest deserve protection? Don't all of these lands deserve protection? And when we talk about tribal lands, indigenous peoples' lands, sacred places, places that have stories behind them and heritage and tradition, and they are indeed their burial grounds in many cases. Don't these places? I mean, it seems that there are treaties that were supposed to protect these places. And stretching that idea even a little bit further, take into account the fact that maybe you could say, well, this particular spot on the earth, this is sacred to First Nations, so of course, so we're going to protect that. If you think about it, though, all of it belongs to First Nations. Everywhere you set your foot, that's First Nations land, everywhere. And we've basically paved it over and forgotten about it. Okay, moving right along, of other places around the world, across North America, and we now have a different government as we spoke of yesterday on Monday. Of course, the results of the election, Canada for Prime Minister, resulted in another Trudeau in office, and we would like to think that a more liberal and progressive voice at the helm would result in more liberal and progressive protections for land. Alberta is a wasteland. Northern Alberta is a wasteland. Look at the pictures. Look at the aerial views of what's happened there in the tar sands pits. It's a smoking inferno. It's a hellish place. It's poison. And it will never, never be able to be returned to anything like a natural state. That land is gone. It looks like nothing else on earth. That, of course, we would hope, we expected that under the hand of Stephen Harper, but not Trudeau. No, but of course he does say he supports the Keystone XL, which now even some rather disappointing political figures here in the United States and the Democratic Party have come out against the Keystone XL. And we forget, though, that there's also Enbridge and any number of other extensions of this huge pipeline that we still have to fight and oppose all the time. It's very easy to become lost in a welter of agendas and efforts to stop the pipelines from crossing the country, making their way down to the Gulf, to the refineries. Another place, that's our own. That's our own poisoned land, too. Again, that's something to see. You have to look at pictures of it to believe it. Shouldn't get close to it. It'll make you very, very sick. But Now we have a Trudeau, and we'll see what happens from there. North Dakota, oil and salt water are still spilling at an out-of-control rate from a North Dakota oil well owned by Oasis Petroleum. Over the weekend, it blew up, and so far more than 67,000 gallons of crude oil and about 84,000 gallons of saltwater brine, which, again, that's toxic, and it's a byproduct of oil and gas drilling. Do we really need to poison any more water? We're running out of water. running out of water fast. Very soon, water will be our new version of oil, and it will come at a price. Why will it come at a price? Why will water come at a price? Because of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of course. Everything will be privatized. It's not a trade deal. It's the final piece of the puzzle. It's exactly what corporations have always been going after. It's the Holy Grail. The privatization of water. So why don't we just use water recklessly in the business of creating more and more fracked oil, make as much profit out of that as possible, and then simply shift gears and sell water instead. That's exactly what it is. But despite the company's weekend-long efforts to gain control over this, the well is still not being capped. It's about 15 miles south of the city of White Earth. The North Dakota Department of Health said the spill has already impacted a nearby river. And campaign mailers and flyers of Port of Vancouver voters know where Eric LeBrun and Lisa Ross stand. They're the candidates. And that said, we've talked a great deal about the environment, Indigenous peoples, and how it's all connected and interrelated. Vladimir Putin is visiting with his buddy Assad. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. Kate Welsh engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Hunter. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of How We Got On at the Portland Playhouse, Wednesday through Sundays until October 25th. Directed by Jen Rowe, How We Got On is the story of three teenagers in the suburbs of the Midwest who dream of fame in the golden age of hip-hop in the late 80s. That's How We Got On, Wednesdays through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and